Hey there, welcome to Sauce and Bomb Podcast. I'm your host, Anna Dana, Head of Growth at Sauce Group, serial acquirer buying wonderful SaaS businesses to take them to the next level. And here I chat with inspiring founders and experts to get an inside scoop on how they made their business a success. So today with me is Arnaud, founder of Scalelist, sales enabling software that allows salespeople to easily create and organize email lists right from Sales Navigator.
Exactly. Welcome. Thank you so much. Thank you for having me.
Sure, anytime. That was a bit of a mouthful, lots of sales and sales enablement. But yeah, it's interesting that you're building that. It's a pretty saturated thing, I think, at this point. But yeah, and that's why I'm also a bit more curious, like, okay, how different you guys are and what's the mission here. But before we get there, let's talk about you, your background, because you sprouted out of a service business. So what's the journey there?
Yeah, so to go back to my background, so first of all, you and I, we live in the same region. Even if we are Caucasian, we live in the same region. So you live in Vietnam, I live in Singapore. I arrived in Singapore 9 years ago, so it's been a in quite some time already. Time flies, it's insane. Worked with different companies, Rocket Internet and Accelerasia, on different of their portfolio companies, where I basically learned sales and business development. And after that, in May 2020, with Youssef El Khadiwi, which is my current business partner for two of the businesses that we own, so the Scale Lab and Scalelist. Scale Lab is a lead generation outbound agency that we created in May 2020. And since Jan this year, so for the past 3 months, I would say, we kind of retired from that company after running it for almost 5 years. And the reason why we transitioned from the service to the SaaS, it's for, I mean, multiple reasons, but I think the main one is we always wanted to run a product and grow a product before running Scalelab. And the creation of Scalelist happened in, I would say it's a segmented creation. So in end of 2022, early 2023, we started to build the product. I was almost not involved in the product creation, in the sense that Youssef was mostly running that show. And I was still like full on the Scalelab, the agency. And then throughout 2023 up until March, April, 2024, which is about a year ago, we kind of ran two businesses at the same time, which is, to be very honest, very, very, very difficult. And I don't recommend anyone to do that, because it's just a recipe for disaster, because you don't have the time to properly manage your service business, and you don't have the time to properly manage your SaaS. And plus, you have a lot of frustration because you don't want to invest a lot of time in your service business, but you have to, because that's what pays the bill and all the employees and et cetera, et cetera. So in 2024, we were in Bali together with Youssef, and we were like, okay, we need to make a transition here. And I mean, by the end of Q3 2024, one of us, we need to pay one of the two salaries out of Scalelist. And then at the end of Q4, we are together under the payroll of Scalelist. So that was the goal, and we did it, which was cool, actually, because that was one big milestone of 2024 for us, and also making sure that we can start 2025 with a project that was exciting us, and also not having to continue running the service business anymore.
Okay. Yeah, that's pretty interesting. That was, I think when you're bootstrapped, you don't really have, just enormous amount of time to kind of think and iterate and like get to a perfect point and where it went to transition. So if you want to like really focus on something, that's just, you know, one leap that you're supposed to take. Also very curious because, well, yes, you're right. We're in the same part of the world. Oh my God, it does not happen very often. So I'm like, this podcast usually run very late at night. So I'm very happy to do it at 1 p.m. But yeah, I'm curious why Singapore. You're not the first, I think you're like maybe third or fourth founder operating out of Singapore. Any like benefits? Why Singapore?
I mean, yes, you have a lot of benefits living in Singapore, but to really give you the full story, if you want the full story, I did not plan to go to Singapore originally. What happened is it was in 2016. I was just like fresh from school, from business school. And at that time, I was looking for a job in the US, in the Valley, California. I've done like 4 or 5 rounds of interviews per company, did not get any job there. And what happened is there was one European company that I really wanted to work for, which was Rocket Internet, the German startup studio. And I was like, okay, US apparently doesn't want me. So maybe I'm going to try and apply for a job in Berlin at Rocket Internet. I did. The HR at Rocket replied to me and said, look, that position that you wanted, actually, this is not open in Berlin anymore, but it's open in Singapore. And then I said, yes, why not? I mean, I'm open to more or less anything. I'm 24 years old and whatever. So I apply, I get the job. And it was December 2016. And they say, okay, can you be in Singapore in 3 weeks? And I was like, okay, guys, no problem. And I arrived in Singapore January 2017. Then I worked there for them for like about like more than a year. And then, you know, when you understand that you can travel more or less everywhere from Singapore, which is the perfect hub, the weather is, I mean, it's humid and hot and it rains like hard every day for like 30 minutes, but it's fine. Like right now it's like blue sky. You don't have to worry about the weather. Tax-wise, it's fantastic. You pay almost no tax. You are surrounded by so many people from different backgrounds, different countries. Like whenever you go for dinners with some friends, it's very often that you have, let's say, 10 people around the table and you have 9, 10 different nationalities. Imagine like the how cool it is, and also how much you can learn also from other people, like from different backgrounds and from different countries. So technically, I didn't have any options that were better than staying in Singapore. So that's why after 8 years and a half, almost 9, I'm still in Singapore and I'm enjoying it a lot, to be very honest.
All right. Okay. How is Singaporean food after France? Big transition.
Very, very diverse. Mm-hmm. Very, very diverse in the sense that the food scene in Singapore is pretty amazing. In the sense that you have very good restaurants from a lot of different countries in the world. Like very good French, very good Italian, very good Indian, very good Sri Lankan restaurant, Indo, Chinese, Vietnamese, Thai. I mean, everything is good. Everything is good. And I think in Asia in general, like for example, I was in Korea 2 weeks ago, and same, they have a food scene that is incredible, like amazing Japanese, amazing Korean, amazing Italian. So, I mean, I'm a foodie. I can eat quite a lot. And but no, the food scene in Singapore is pretty good. Like you have
this can easily turn into a food podcast. But to recap this, move to Singapore, great weather, no taxes.
Yeah.
And great food. Oh my God. Yeah, yeah. No, I mean, living in Asia myself for quite a lot, I can totally back you up. But okay, let's go to Scalist. And yeah, I mean, I've had a few founders here who have been building something similar. I mean, Stefan from Expandi has been here, mm-hmm. and you know, he's been in it fairly early, so it kind of could see Expandi grow from like the very first iterations to what it is now. And yeah, I mean, LinkedIn works, right? Let's be honest. LinkedIn works for B2B. It's an amazing channel. Mm-hmm. How are you making it work for your mm-hmm. customers? And yeah. what's the essence that's so different that, you know, it's you against them?
Yeah, that's a very good question. One element that I want to highlight here is we have plenty of competitors, a lot of guys like doing exactly the same things than us. However, one key part of the reason why we are able to exist and grow is due to the massive market that is available. And if you think about it, Scalist right now, it's a one feature SaaS. It's very simple. It helps you to extract lead list and lead search from LinkedIn Sales Navigator, clean that data, and get the valid email and the mobile numbers of the leads that you just extracted. And it's literally, I mean, when I say one click, I'm exaggerated, it's like three clicks, okay? Literally takes 3 minutes to get that information. So it's super simple. And what we need to take into consideration as well is, as we both in SaaS, and we both, I guess, pretty connected to our ecosystem, we tend to forget that there is quite a lot of people who basically don't know anything about LinkedIn Sales Navigator. They have never used LinkedIn Sales Navigator. They don't really go on LinkedIn. So you have, the reason why Scalist exists is because you have a lot of beginners and intermediate sales people. And what I mean by beginners and intermediate doesn't mean that they are not good or they are junior. It means that they don't have the tech knowledge associated to sales. They could be very good at doing cold calling. They could be very good at doing door to door, but managing data and organizing data very simply is something that is complicated. Like, for example, if you need to run any specific workflow or build any specific table into clay.com, for example, it would scale my users, like Clay. It would scale my users because it's not that complicated, but it looks complicated for someone who've never tried any specific SaaS. Like, I have clients, they don't know what a SaaS is. What makes us different is the simplicity of extracting data from LinkedIn Sales Navigator in like three clicks. Also, one thing that we are super, I wouldn't say different, but we try to serve our clients as the best as we can. And when I'm saying this is the customer support, I mean, customer support is me and I'm always on it, except when I sleep, but I try to provide bespoke answer as much as I can to our user. So yeah, that's more or less the way we are different. And yeah, and the market is huge. So we have a lot of people that we can target, that we can address, that we can help.
This episode is sponsored by Rewardful. Looking for new ways to find customers for your SaaS business? Consider building an affiliate program. Rewardful is the easiest affiliate tracking platform to set up, manage, and scale for SaaS companies. Building a successful affiliate program can be a little bit intimidating at first, and that's why Rewardful has taken what they've observed from their most successful customers' affiliate programs and distilled that into an exclusive online course. The exciting part? Their affiliate marketing course is absolutely free. Start the course at academy.rewardful.com. Academy.rewardful.com. and turn your biggest fans into your best marketers.
Okay. All right. I had this conversation with Jason Cohen from WP Engine, and that's exactly what he said. Like, when you're so small, you have this very unique ability to differentiate by just being there. You are the customer success, the customer support. So giving that extra layer of attention to your customers can actually make you very different, make you very relatable and all that. But it's interesting also what you said about like people not understanding what SaaS is. And, you know, also being in that bubble, I can also get into that headspace sometimes, but it's definitely not about the age. And, you know, especially living in Asia right now, I used to always think that, oh my God, like all those companies that say, we want to digitalize your business. And like, oh my God, that's such a weird like idea. Everything is digital. You know, everyone knows what it is. Everything is on your laptop. But I mean, there are so many businesses that have like zero digitalization, especially here in this part of the world. So I think what you were doing, like simplifying stuff. And I mean, I'm honestly not very tech savvy and I'm not even in sales that much, but I think I could, that's something that could really draw me to a tool, you know, because it's simple. Like, I mean, we're on Riverside and the initial decision for using Riverside was because back then when I was starting on it, it literally had two buttons, start and stop. That's it.
Perfect.
Yeah. So I think, for like this kind of early stage validating the idea, this is a good thing to start with. Okay. Mm-hmm. You're also bootstrapped, right? I think we kind of touched upon that a little bit. Yeah.
So we're not fully bootstrapped. I want to specify this. Yeah. So we stayed bootstrapped until Jan this year. And raised a tiny bit of money from an investment fund in the US named Tiny Seed.
Okay.
It's an accelerator, yes. So we're part of their program. And one of the main reasons we did it is first because the partners at Tiny Seed, they have a pretty important background in the SaaS industry. And also we can tap on their network. We can ask a lot of questions to them. That's one thing. And the second is to come back to what we discussed earlier. Youssef and I, we really wanted to transition. Mm-hmm. And even if we were profitable and also being able to stay bootstrapped in Jan 2025, we decided to take that caution of cash to be able to be like, okay, whatever happened, we can stay the way we are and it's going to work. And we have the cash, whatever happens. So that's why we did it.
Yeah. Okay. Yeah. Thank you. All right. Well, you know, I've had quite a few founders from like who have participated in Tiny Seed. You know, I would still call them bootstrappers because, you said, it's a tiny round and you still kind of, you're pushed to focus on the product. Okay. You're almost bootstrapped. So I was going to ask you like, what are the, because we all know about kind of the pros of bootstrapping, right? It's the freedom. It's, you know, kind of the ability to fully own your journey and, you know, not being an employee almost of your investor. What are the cons? Like, what is, okay, one of the things is, I think, not discussed enough, and that's something that you just brought up, is just the fact that, hey, you know, you've got to make a living, and that's okay. But yeah, what are the cons of bootstrapping?
So I think I can give a very detailed answer about that. My first company, Scalelab with Youssef. It's a bootstrap company. And Scalelist, we started bootstrap as well. And the cons of staying bootstrap is, let's be very transparent, cash flow. Because if you make a bad decision, you make that bad decision, it's going to impact your P&L. And then there are some very important future actions that you cannot take. Like, for example, if you want to, let's say, run ads or hire any specific person to help you on a specific topic that can help you grow your company, you cannot do it because you don't have enough cash. So then you rely on learning everything, doing everything on your own, which could be interesting. And of course, your learning curve is, you learn a lot of things, but in terms of time, it's not the best way to manage your time. Like, now that we have a little bit of cash and we're profitable and things are a lot better than before, you can iterate and basically run tests a lot faster, which at our stage is super important, I think.
Okay. And that's one thing that I think I never asked. Is the tiny seed investment dilutive or not?
Yes.
It is. Okay. All right. I also want to ask you about growth. Like you just said, you're profitable. How are you guys growing? And I know that at least the number that I have is 23% month over month.
That's what I shared with you. I think
pretty good. Last week. I mean, we're early stage. You have to, you know.
Yeah, you need to update. We always stay between 19 to 25% usually month over month.
Okay. All right. So, what are the growth channels, and what have been the most successful experiments?
SaaS Group is partnering with SaaSDoc USA, taking place May 13th to 14th in Austin, Texas. This is where heads-down SaaS founders and their teams move their business forward. As a partner, we have 30% discount available to share with our network. Use code SaaSGroup30 in all capital letters and see you there.
Yeah, so one thing that actually, Youssef, my business partner, really started in January 2024. So January 2024, I was still investing 100% of my time on the agency, and it was, I would say, 40-60, 50-50, around that. And he said, okay, I'm going to start recording YouTube videos, make sure that they are SEO oriented, so we can rank whenever people are asking questions on Google or YouTube. And let's see if we're able to drive traffic to the website. So he did this. I don't remember exactly how many videos, but he recorded, but quite a few from Jan to May 2024. And so we catch up in Bali. We are both with a strong desire of not running the service business anymore. And then we're like, okay, let's check Scalelist numbers. Let's check how the YouTube videos are working. And also let's double check where is our traffic coming from, because whenever somebody signs up on the website, you can, if they, of course, tick the box, you can know if they discovered us, let's say on Google, on YouTube, on LinkedIn, and other different channels that we share as well in that particular drop-down menu. And we realized that, I think it was 53 or 54% of the users, and then the subscribers, I think it was like 48% at that time, were coming from YouTube. And we were like, all right, there is something that we need to do a lot more. So, and I think that week was pivotal for us. because we realized, okay, we need to double down on YouTube. We need to do more YouTube videos. We need to be better at doing YouTube videos. And since then, we have been posting a lot more regularly. I also started to post on our channel, so on the Scalist YouTube channel. And the videos that we are posting there are mostly related to LinkedIn Sales Navigator. So it's like the middle of funnel and bottom of funnel type of content related to LinkedIn and LinkedIn Sales Navigator. We have a few top of funnel about LinkedIn and about LinkedIn Sales Navigator as well. But it's for people to learn as much as possible about that platform. And of course, the bottom of funnel type of content, they show you how to extract the information that you wanted to, you basically filtered in Sales Nav, and we help you to extract that using Scalist. That's how we have been running some traffic to the website. And yeah, so far it's still performing in April 2025.
Where is the second half of the traffic coming from?
So multiple acquisition channels. So we have, of course, Google search. The thing is, I talked to some users and some subscribers, actually some clients, asking them, hey, how did you find us? And most of the people, they write their question on Google, they find a video, and they click on the video, they learn something, and then they go to the website, and then they try, and then eventually they subscribe. So you have people, it's mostly like, where are you going to ask your question? Is it Google or YouTube? But yeah, so to come back to your question, Google search, a little bit of the Chrome Web Store, LinkedIn as well, because Youssef and I, we are quite active on LinkedIn. We post weekly on LinkedIn and for quite some time. So we are identified already for quite a few years now. So yes, mostly those three, four acquisition channels.
I think that's very important what you just said. It's where people are actually searching, because yes, your content can be on YouTube, but I feel like when people are actually searching for something on YouTube, they want to learn, right? So they're probably beginners, probably very kind of early in their journey. They're on the lookout for information a bit more than they're on the lookout for a tool. And when mm-hmm. people are asking that question on Google or whatever else they're using, they are actually looking to solve a problem and they want a tool to help them. So yeah, that's a very interesting, that, I mean, they're taking a journey through your YouTube content, mm-hmm. but I think the type of the customer or user is a bit different depending on where they're coming from.
Now that you are mentioning it, actually, I never thought about this, to be very transparent with you. And now that you're mentioning it, there is an Australian client, so the same guy that I was mentioning earlier, who showed me exactly how he found us. So he wrote his question on Google, then was able to find a video, and then he purchased the solution. So, I mean, that is matching what you're saying. But now I'm going to be a lot more, I mean, I'm going to try to understand what people were looking for when they were on Google. Is it information or a solution?
Yeah. No, I'm just, you know, if I can just drop my two cents there. It's not the first time when we're discussing, you know, kind of growth for YouTube. And I keep seeing that, you know, whenever it's a acquisition of a user or even a customer, mm-hmm. there is a lot of churn happening, because maybe it wasn't about the solution, it was just about like doing something they needed for their job, and kind of your tool seemed
was there.
it just kind of was there, so they're on the lookout for like information on how to do something, but not necessarily what is the best thing I can use to solve that.
Okay.
But that's just, yeah, that's just something I'm noticing. Maybe it's not right. Maybe, you know, if you're listening, come back to us. I don't know if that helps immensely. But anyway, you also told me that, you know, part of the customers are enterprise customers. And yeah, I wonder how, you know, how you're getting them. And, you know, this early stage, how big of an effect they have on the company, on the roadmap. And if those customers are in our region of the world or somewhere else, because I think that's also something that could make a difference.
That's two very good questions. I would say 90% of our enterprise clients are in the United States. And the way they hear from us is either word of mouth, or I've been connected with them on LinkedIn and they see my content, or it's YouTube. But what's interesting with them is, you know, on our website, we have, of course, on our pricing page, we have our three types of pricing, and we have the custom type of package that bigger companies, if they want a lot of volume, can reach out to us. And most of the time is via the website. I don't reach out to them. So they go on the website, they answer some questions through the form that we provide them when they click on contact sales on the website. They book my calendar. We have a conversation. Of course, you need to sell them something in the sense that during that conversation with them, I need to make sure that they trust me. I need to make sure that they understand how the tool works. I also need to make sure that the tool like ScaleList is a fit for them, because like one element as well with enterprise, and that's something that I'm seeing more and more. One thing interesting is that enterprise sometimes they don't need an enterprise package simply because they think themselves as big. They don't look at your pricing page in details. They're like, okay, I'm big. I want something big. I click on contact sales. I want to talk to someone. That's how they think. And like, for example, the guy I talked to yesterday, based in Seattle. So that type of big company based in Seattle, he booked a call with me. He thought he needed an enterprise, but no, he's going to start with a scaler with 5,000 credits because he doesn't need more. And he's going to test the solution with a scaler. And then if we deploy the solution to more people in his department, then maybe we're going to see and think about an enterprise package. However, sometimes we have random, like for example, one of our enterprise clients is a printing company in the middle of nowhere in the US. And the guy was very clear about what he wanted. Like, I want X number of credit per LinkedIn Sales Navigator license. I want that by tomorrow. Can you do it? Yes, we can. Okay, let's do it. And then you start. So most of the time they reach out to us. I still need to make sure that they trust me and that they understand the solution. And then, yeah, they become clients. But we don't do any specific effort to target them at the moment.
All right. And do they change your product in a way? Like, do they have some specific requests?
Yes, they do. So because we are having bigger clients, I think this is November, December 2024. So it's quite new, but we have more and more. Because they have multiple LinkedIn Sales Navigator licenses, they want like a team plan that is like where they can manage every single users from their own department, which is something that we don't have, but that we are building. They want also specific integrations. So at the moment we are building integrations with CRMs, but because they asked for it, and we have more and more people asking for it as well. So we had the inquiries from the enterprise clients saying, hey, we want a Salesforce integration. We want a HubSpot integration. We want a PipeDrive integration. Okay, those X number of guys, they want an integration. Who else among the hundreds of clients that we have, who else want an integration? And then everybody raised their hand. And you're like, okay, we need to build them. So that's more or less how we proceed and how we are able to make the business evolve.
Okay. Yeah, that makes sense. All right. Okay. I just have maybe a couple more questions, the usuals here. And yeah, I mean, you guys are fairly early and it seems like, you know, by dropping a few hints here and there, you're growing very nicely. Mm-hmm. But yeah, what has been the biggest win and the biggest failure, and can be for you personally in the company or for the company itself?
The biggest win, that's I think the biggest win is YouTube. I mean, in terms of betting on one acquisition channel, not knowing what we were doing, and specifically for Youssef, because he started it, not knowing what he was doing, and betting on it, learning bit by bit how to improve things along the way, and then, yeah, analyzing things after like 4 or 5 months and be like, okay, this is working a lot better than other channels. Let's just dabble the work that we are doing there to make sure that, yeah, we generate even more. So I think that is our biggest win in terms of acquisition. And maybe a complement of this one is, on a personal level, is being able to be in business right now in 2025 with the same business partner for the past 5 years. And something that I've never shared that previously, we never had any fight in 5 years, any fight, which is, I think, I feel lucky to be able to work with one of my best friends and be able to work from wherever I want, make decent money, and yes, and being happy to sit at my desk on a daily basis. So that's my second biggest win. And a failure, I mean, we learn from failures. So I think they are all good. But I think one failure is learning too late how to prioritize your time properly and take actions on what really matters and really move the business forward. And I'm going to give you some details there. Whenever you start a company, your number one goal is to generate revenue, right? And you need to learn all the different other aspects related to the business, finance, HR, marketing, etc., etc. But when you're small, you need to be able to prioritize your time properly and not have a to-do list with 15,000 tasks to do, but you need to be able to allocate sufficient amount of time on the priority number one. And you also need to, on purpose, put on the side the rest. And I think I did it. Now I'm doing it. But I learned that through multiple failures and working on the wrong stuff at the wrong time. And I think being able to assess your time and the task that you are working on as an entrepreneur, but also for anyone, it is so important, because when you work on the right task, it compounds. When you work on the wrong task, you're wasting time. And you're wasting money as well. And so, yeah, I think that was it was my biggest learning.
Yeah.
Over time.
Okay. Yeah, that's great. I mean, it's always about, you know, I'm asking about failures, but honestly, the kind of the purpose of the question is what can we learn here? Mm-hmm. And yeah, how how you got out of something that could possibly be a failure. But all right, that works. That's, I think that's a great one to share. Even like, I think sometimes here, like in this part of the podcast, we tend to kind of, you know, go back to something that's a bit more like common sense. But I feel like it's like with all the business books and like all the self-help kind of books, you tend to know all of this stuff, but you're like, you know, in your tunnel.
Exactly.
And then you just need to be reminded of it.
Like, you know exactly what you need to do to be fit and healthy. Does that mean, and I'm sure a lot of people know that, does that mean that everybody does it? No. So that's exactly the same. Like, you know that you, what you need to do to stay focused and work on the same, on the right thing at the right time. Does that mean that you apply it? No. And I did not do that for months. It's a lot of disciplines. It's a lot of consistency. It's a lot of, yeah, focus and be like, no, I won't do that because there is no leverage here. And you need to understand that notion of like the definition of leverage and how it applies to your business, because otherwise you screwed and you keep on working on the wrong stuff.
Yeah, absolutely.
It's not easy. But no. Practice makes perfect, I think.
Hopefully. All right. The last question is always about a hack, right? So it can be anything, can be something that works for you on a personal founder level. Or something that works for the company and you think other founders could benefit from?
One thing that works for us and that I implemented probably two, three months ago is every person that subscribe or cancel his Scaly subscription, I need to talk to them and I connect with everyone. Or I email everyone, basically. The reason is I need to understand why people sign up and why they cancel. And by doing this, and by it's part of my routine. I start with this every day. And right now, because I've been running this for 2 months, I'm doing it manually. So it's tedious. So I'm automating it. But doing this helped us to learn a lot about the why, like why people are buying, why people are canceling. And it comes back to, yeah, talk to your user, et cetera, but a lot of people don't do it. And I used to not do it because you take the clients as granted. Oh, okay, yeah, they subscribe. That's perfect. That's fine. But no, because you don't know why they subscribe or you don't know why they cancel. And I started doing this after catching up with the founders of Scrapping Bee. I don't know if you know them or if you have interviewed them.
Absolutely.
Yeah. So I met with them physically. They are also a tiny seed company. I met with them in the US last December. And I was already doing, I was already taking those type of actions with the paying and the people who unsubscribe. But I was not doing it very regularly. And one of the founders of Scrapping Bee told me, look, it's been 5 years that I'm in business. They do 5 million ARR or something like that. And he said, I'm still doing this. So you have been doing this, you're in this business for like 8 months and you don't do it consistently, dude, not good. And I was like, okay, I'm going to do it consistently. And I started doing this and wow, like you learn a lot. So yeah, that's one piece of knowledge / hack that I'm happy I started to execute.
Okay. Yeah. No, it makes great sense. I mean, always stay closer to your customers. Always try to understand why they're there. Actually, just yesterday, I had a podcast with another founder. Well, also shared a little hack, and I think it may relate to what you just said a little bit, is that on their sign-in button, they also have a drop-down where it basically gives you an option to say why you're signing up for a tool. And yeah, it's like, I'm signing up because I'm, you know, I'm new and this looks like something that could help me. I'm signing up because I want to switch from what I have right now, yada, yada, yada. So it basically, yeah, gives them the reason right away. It's automated and also helps them understand like where in their onboarding process they are. So if it's a new person, maybe they need like to hold hands with the onboarding person and really walk through the entire process. And if they're switching vendors, then, you know, they're probably already advanced. They don't need to learn the basics. And I thought that was very, very smart and also automates this kind of like first step of the conversation. Uh-huh. And then you can start where it makes sense.
Interesting. And did they make that specific step compulsory? Like you cannot?
Yeah, I think so.
Okay.
That's a good question. So, but I'll send you the link. You can check yourself.
Send me the link because I thought about that. We thought about that and we were like, yeah, maybe we should not make it compulsory because it's going to create more frustration. So then we send a form. Honestly, the form, yeah, but we send that form in the cancellation email. You have probably 5 users who filled that up. So that's why I need to reach out to them to like get the real reason and connect with them, et cetera, et cetera. So that's a good point. That's a good point. Please share me that link. I wanna experiment this.
Happy to share. See, that's why the podcast exists, because hey, you know, some founders can learn from the others and you know, I can learn from all of you and then share it. So yeah, thank you so much for sharing your story and the way you grow. And I will be looking closer, I guess, at what you're doing on YouTube, because, well, quite a few brands are starting to be a bit more active there because, well, you know, video content is booming and, you know, LinkedIn is becoming this business TikTok kind of thing. So it's really doing something. And I'm very curious how it's going to affect the businesses. But
thank you for having me. Thank you so much for your time.
Anytime. And I hope we're doing it again sometime and see where you land next year.
Yeah, definitely. And if you come to Singapore, for sure, please reach out. And I will do exactly the same if I go to Dalong. No worries.
Yes. Okay. Yeah. Sounds good. All right. Thank you so much.
Thank you.
Take care.
That was yet another awesome conversation on SaaS Unbound. We're always looking for new guests to share their experiences. We mostly talk with bootstrapped SaaS founders, and if you're one, reach out to me directly at anna@saas.group or find me on LinkedIn. If you're not bootstrapped or even not SaaS but have a great story to tell, we want to hear from you too. And obviously, SaaS Unbound wouldn't be possible without the SaaS Group, a founder-friendly private equity company that buys awesome businesses that people love to take them to even greater success. If you're thinking about selling your company or just exploring your options, feel free to visit saas.group, fill in the form, and expect a response in under 24 hours.